without a crisp string of orders in the language. Fortunately, the people around her were too preoccupied by the alligators to pay much attention. The chandelier trembled where it hung, then shattered, prisms chiming and blowing apart in puffs of crystal dust. Electricity fought down invisible arcs of lighting, targeting the alligator's electronic attachments. The reptiles spasmed and thrashed, tails sweeping in wide curves as their jaws opened and closed on empty air. Irene watched in relief as Vale and Kai dodged the alligators that had been surrounding them. "Nicely done," she said to Bradamant. Bradamant sniffed, somehow managing to suggest that the words, "of course," were simply beneath her. "I can't see why you didn't do it yourself," she said. "Chaos contamination," Irene replied reluctantly. The alligators were slowing their thrashing now, their wild spasms becoming mere squirming wriggles. "The door to the library was sabotaged on this side. We think it must have been Alberic." "Wait!" Bradamant grabbed her shoulder. Some of the high color drained from her face. "Alberic is here?" "Yes," Irene said bluntly. "Didn't you get notified?" The expression on Bradamant's face spoke for itself. Belatedly, Irene put two and two together. "You're here without authorization, aren't you? You came here even though this is a quarantined world, and it was my mission. And I just saved you and your student from getting eaten by alligators," Bradamant snapped. "You owe me. I want the precise details about Alberic being here, now." "So why did you come here anyhow?" Irene asked, ignoring the demand. As she checked, there was still enough chaos to cover their conversation. She and Bradamant weren't the only people to be staying up on the tables. A lot of other people were waiting to be absolutely sure that the alligators were dead before they came down to ground level again. "To this party, that is, not just to this alternate." Bradamant was silent for a moment. There might even have been a trace of shame in her eyes. But Irene wasn't sure if it was shame at having stolen another librarian's mission, or just embarrassment at being caught. Finally she said, "I needed to investigate the Iron Brotherhood." "Congratulations," Irene said, and jerked her head in the direction of the alligators. "You found them. Were they supposed to meet you here, or was it just a happy coincidence?" "You're very insolent tonight," Bradamant said softly, dangerously. "Oh, don't you think that I have reason?" Irene had enough control to keep her voice down, but not enough to keep back her words. "If you have anything, anything to do with this piece of bloody lunacy." "I'd have thought that Alberic was more important than collateral civilian casualties," Bradamant said. Her eyes glittered. "Shouldn't you be briefing me on that, rather than wasting time on those people?" "Did you have anything to do with this?" Irene repeated. "No," Bradamant said, "if that helps you answer my question." Irene glanced at the dying alligators again. She didn't trust Bradamant, but she couldn't refuse to warn her. "Yesterday, I was told to beware of Alberic, a direct communication from the library. This morning, Kai and I went to talk with Dominic Aubrey at our library entrance point. We didn't find him there, but we found his skin rolled up in a jar of vinegar, and a chaos trap on the door to the library itself." Bradamant blinked slowly. "Dominic Aubrey is dead. Actually dead." "Yes," Irene said. "Well, probably, given the alternatives. When did you get here? Did you see him when you came through? If we can pin down when Alberic killed him and trapped the door." "Irene!" Kai and Vale had converged on them unexpectedly. Vale had several cuts, but Kai was elegantly unruffled. He offered his hand to Irene. "If you'd like a hand down. And Bradamant, of course."
"Of course,"
Bradamant said in suddenly sweetened tones. She stepped past Irene, hips swaying, and placed her hands in Kai's, letting him assist her down. Kai threw a martyred glance over Bradamant's shoulder at Irene. It said, more clearly than words, "I couldn't possibly leave her to fall in the remains of the herring, could I?" Irene sighed. She set her chin, sat down on the edge of the table, and swung off it to stand on the floor. Her gown was already ruined anyhow. I'm glad to see that both you gentlemen are safe and well, she said flatly. She could feel Vale's measuring stare on her, Kai and Bradamant, and tried to ignore it. There was no reason whatever for her to have any feelings on the subject at all. The doors slammed open. A squad of men in vaguely military uniforms came barreling through, rifles shouldered. They were led by a dark-skinned man with turban and moustache, his uniform differentiated by a wide green sash. They pointed their guns at the alligators and began to riddle them with bullets, ignoring the fact that the poor reptiles were now barely moving.
Ah, Silver said from behind Irene's shoulder. The police at last. Inspector Singh is as vigorous as ever.
He took Irene's hand between his.
My dearest girl, you are wounded.
Irene was conscious of both Kai and Vale staring at Silver in a distinctly freezing way. She wished that she could just have had even 5 minutes to get some answers out of them and Bradamant before Silver had turned up. A scratch, she said quickly, gingerly trying to slide her hand out of his grasp. Sir, no doubt Inspector Singh will want to speak to you.
And you must introduce me to your beautiful friend,
Silver said, his eyes on Bradamant, his grip on Irene's hand painfully firm. Irene glanced at Bradamant. Bradamant gave a small nod of agreement, her lips curling in a sweet smile.
Lord Silver, Irene said formally, this is my friend Bradamant. I had no idea that she would be at this party, but of course I am delighted to see her, and I hope she falls over and plants her face in a dish of salmon roe. Bradamant, this is Lord Silver, one of the Liechtenstein Fae who is visiting England.
And would have come much sooner.
Silver cut in smoothly, dropping Irene's hand and stepping forward to take Bradamant's elegant fingers in his.
Had I known that such beauty was to be found, how could I have missed a gem like you? Sweet lady, do me the favor to say that I may have the honor of your closer acquaintance.
Irene could recognize an opportunity when it sat up and begged in front of her. She began to quietly edge away as Silver raised Bradamant's hand to his lips. Silver's nostrils flared. He sniffed at Bradamant's hand, eyes brightening to an utterly inhuman shade of yellow.
I know that smell,
he spat.
Belphegor, I have you at last.
Chapter 12.
What?
Bradamant said, but her attitude was wrong. It was one of denial, not blank incomprehension.
What? Vale said, in a very different tone of voice, taking a step forward.
Impossible, Irene said, without too much hope of being believed.
I'd be accusing you too, little mouse, Silver said. But you were there when we opened the safe, and I know you were as surprised as I was. You should be glad that I've identified one of our enemies. This woman is Belphegor. She is responsible for stealing a highly valuable book from Lord Wyndham, and maybe for his death. I recognized her scent from the card she left in his safe. Johnson, my horsewhip!
A thin, pale-faced man in grey stepped up and offered a coiled horsewhip to Silver.
This is all a terrible mistake, Bradamant said firmly. I demand that you release me.
Silver looked at her with dangerous sharpness, lips curling to show unnaturally white teeth.
Belphegor, you have no idea what you have blundered into. Give me your word to restore the book to me, and I will consider letting you go. For the moment, at least.
Hist, Irene said loudly. The police are approaching. We don't want them to hear about this.
Everyone twitched and turned to see the inspector in the green sash marching towards them. His demeanor fairly shouted determination, and there was something worryingly satisfied about his smile.
Inspector Singh, Vale murmured in Irene's ear, over from the Indian Empire for the last 2 months, on a formal officer exchange between police forces. He didn't like the Fae there, and he doesn't like them here. He'll take any opportunity to pry.
Do we object to that?
Irene murmured back, just as quietly. Bradamant was trying to wrench her wrist loose from Silver, clearly not quite willing to use the language in front of him, but he was effortlessly maintaining his grip.
That might depend on what we have to offer him,
Vale said. His eyes were on Bradamant. While Irene could think of several ways for her, Kai, and Bradamant to get out of the current situation, very few of them involved keeping Vale as a reliable contact, much less Silver. Having the law hunt them as criminals would only make things more complicated. And she needed to know what Silver knew about the book and why he wanted it.
If Sing doesn't like Faye, she pointed out, then he won't accept Lord Silver's identification of her as Belphegor. We may be able to get more information out of her later if we help her now.
She is your friend, you said,
Vale murmured. His gaze was cold.
She wasn't supposed to be here,
Irene nearly spat in frustration.
And I knew nothing about her being this criminal.
The inspector stopped and inclined his head slightly to Silver. It wasn't a bow. It was very definitely not a bow. It was barely a nod.
Good evening, sir.
He had a perceptible accent, but an Oxford one, rather than Punjabi or any of the other Indian accents that Irene recognized.
I understand that you've had some sort of minor problem this evening.
A minor problem,
Silver hissed. He whirled to point at the dead alligators and the human corpses, still grasping Bradamant's wrist in his other hand.
You call that a minor problem?
To you, sir, Inspector Singh said coldly. I am sure that it was far more serious to the unfortunate people caught up in this, and my men are handling the casualties. I would be grateful if you could inform me exactly what took place.
As Silver filled him in melodramatic but fundamentally accurate detail, Irene took a silent breath of relief. He hadn't seen who controlled the electricity that took out the alligator threat. She noticed Bradamant relaxing a fraction as well.
That is all, Silver concluded. You may inform me when you have any further details.
He turned his back on the inspector.
Actually, sir, Inspector Singh said, we are aware of the identity of your aggressors.
Everyone stared at him.
The Iron Brotherhood.
He turned another page in his notebook and deliberately made a note before proceeding.
Of course, sir. We are most interested in why they should try to attack your party in such a way.
Oh, Bradamant said. I think I can answer that.
Everyone looked at her. She lowered her head demurely, batted her eyelashes, and took a cute little gasp of breath that made her bosom heave in a way that was neither cute nor little.
They were after a book which they thought was being kept here. In fact, I believe that this attack was a distraction.
Silver's eyes went wide. He flung Bradamant into Inspector Singh's arms with a muffled curse. She bounced and ran for the door, Johnson 2 paces behind him.
Well, Inspector Singh said, setting Bradamant back on her feet. I'm afraid I must ask you to come down to the station with me, madam. We have a few questions.
Bradamant rubbed the hand which Silver had mangled, the imprints of his fingers scarlet against her pale skin.
May I just have a word aside with my friend Irene, Inspector, if you would be so kind?
Of course, madam, Inspector Singh said, without taking so much as one step back.
Bradamant clasped Irene's non-bandaged hand between her own before Irene could react. Very rapidly, in the language but pitched low, she said,
I bind myself by my name, by my oath, and by my word, that if I find the book, I will bring it to you before returning to the library, and that I will consult with you tomorrow morning, if I am free to do so, about what to do next.
She dropped back to English, but kept her voice low.
But for the moment, I need you to do something about that Faye.
Inspector Singh stiffened, staring at the two of them from under heavy dark brows. Well, of course, to him it must have sounded as if Bradamant was talking in his native language and dialect. Irene tried to suppress an urge to feel smug about Bradamant having to explain that, along with everything else.
Of course, she said in English. I will see you then. Please be careful.
However, Bradamant had bound herself in the language. She couldn't break that. She might be able to evade the precise spirit of the oath. Indeed, Irene could think of several ways to get around it, the first one being that bring you the book was not the same as give you the book. But even so, that still brought the book a lot closer than it was right now. And to be completely frank, she was almost too exhausted to care. The oath would do for the moment. Bradamant nodded and turned back to Inspector Singh.
I am at your disposal, sir, she said.
Perhaps we might also consider leaving, Vale suggested. Unless you want to discuss matters further with Lord Silver, Miss Winters.
Irene thought about having to explain things to Silver, having to explain anything to Silver.
What an excellent idea, she agreed enthusiastically. Kai, unless you can think of anything that we've left undone, this might be a good moment to leave.
Kai wiped his sword with an unstained bit of tablecloth and put it down on the table.
I am entirely at your disposal, he said. Where are we going?
Then Irene remembered that they didn't have hotel rooms. Wonderful. One more thing to sort out. Her dismay must have shown on her face, and Vale stepped in, almost smiling.
Allow me to offer you the hospitality of my rooms for the night, Miss Winters. I have a couple of spare bedrooms. And what's more, it will allow your friend and Inspector Singh to find you in the morning.
Inspector Singh nodded, and Irene revised her opinion of his relationship with Vale by a few notches. Clearly the two men were used to working together. She'd have to bear that in mind. She tried to remember exactly where India stood in the history of this alternate. It had become an independent trade partner of Great Britain rather than a colony, not due to any particular lack of imperialism on Britain's part, sadly. And the two empires still maintained close ties. That had explained Singh's accent. Kai stepped forward and offered Irene his arm. She took it, suddenly conscious of her weariness and of the confusion around her. The air was heavy with the smell of blood. Human bodies littered the floor together with alligator corpses, mauled limbs, bloody torsos, screaming faces. Some men and women were still sobbing in corners. Others were filing out of the room, talking to the policeman, or simply drinking. Only a few of the tables were still upright. Others had been battered down or had collapsed under the weight of people crowding onto them. The lovely floor was scarred by claws and gunshots and soaked with blood. There was so much blood.
Are you all right? Kai said softly.
There might have been a time when Irene would have said, no, I'm not, and shut her eyes for a few minutes. But it was not now, and definitely not in front of Bradamant. She swallowed and tried not to breathe the air more than she could help.
I will manage, she said curtly. Thank you.
Your cloak, Miss Winters,
Vale said, draping it over her shoulders. She must have been dangerously distracted, as he'd retrieved it without her noticing. She made a note to be more careful, and filed it along with all the other notes to be more precise, more attentive, less squeamish, and less inclined to curl up and cry on someone's shoulder. Inspector Singh clicked his heels together, half-bowed, and turned away with Bradamant, staying a very precise half-foot away from her. Bradamant didn't look back as she followed him. Outside, on the steps of the Liechtenstein Embassy, there was a mob of photographers, reporters, and interested parties. Street vendors were even selling roasted chestnuts, doughnuts, and candied peanuts. Their fragrance blended with the taint of Irene's blood-stained dress, and she had to struggle not to be sick.
"Did you see the elder Miss Retrograde leave?" Kai asked.
Irene shook her head.
"I saw her alive at the end, but didn't see her go. I suppose she may be useful, if she knows something."
Vale came to a sharp halt, looking down at her.
"The elder Miss Retrograde. Miss Olga Retrograde."
"That was the lady in question," Irene said. "Is there something that we should know about her, sir?"
"Only that she's the biggest society blackmailer in London," Vale said. "The lady is extremely well known for knowing things. The unfortunate thing is that what she knows is rarely advantageous to anyone except herself. As to your acquaintance with her,
It was the first time we'd met, Irene said hastily. The curl of Vale's lip made his opinion of the lady extremely clear. She realized that we weren't Canadians. Vale snorted and turned away to signal a cab.
Do you think we'll have a problem?
Kai murmured. We're probably the least likely people in that room to have a problem with her, Irene answered, equally quietly. After all, what can she blackmail us with? Kai laughed.
True. Over here,
Vale called. One of the swarming cabs had answered his uplifted hand. They had to elbow their way to it through the edges of the crowd, avoiding reporters with notebooks and cameras. Vale drew the shade across the window as they set off. Do you expect us to be watched? Irene asked.
It seems likely, Miss Winters, Vale answered. In my own defense, I will say that I am not unknown to the criminal section of London, nor them to me. But since I have not attempted to hide my identity, we may as well return to my lodgings directly.
Irene nodded, settling back into her seat. The passenger compartment of the cab had two wide leather-covered benches facing each other. Its basic structure was similar to that of a classical hansom carriage, but it was electric-powered rather than horse-drawn, and built of metal rather than wood. She'd been in hansoms before now, and it was strange to be in something so close to one without hearing the sound of hoofbeats.
About your friend, Vale said, leaning forward, bracing his elbows on his knees.
The cab jolted as it turned a corner.
Do you think Silver's accusations regarding her identity are correct?
Irene would have liked to meet his eyes and unflinchingly deny it, but she honestly didn't think it would work. She wondered how much Vale might have deduced about Bradamant simply from their brief meeting. It was the sort of thing that she would expect him to do. I wish that I knew myself, she finally said. I hadn't thought that she'd been in London, or in this alternate, long enough to have done such a thing. And I can't think why she'd do it.
It is a common enough technique, Vale said austerely, to establish a pattern of thefts in order to conceal a single one. If she was planning to steal that book, then she could also have been the perpetrator of those early thefts to camouflage its significance.
Irene considered that idea. It sounded uncomfortably plausible. But why would Bradamant have needed to hide the theft? She said out loud. After all, Bradamant herself could have just left the alternate immediately after stealing the book. But did she want the book for herself, or was she seeking it for the library? She was here without authorization. Irene's blood went cold. Could Bradamant have turned traitor to the library? Kai was only a step behind her.
But if she was trying to hide her theft from us as well as the authorities, he began.
Vale frowned. He raised a hand to interrupt Kai.
A moment, please, Mr. Strongrock. Driver!
He hammered with the head of his cane on the roof of the carriage.
Driver! Why are we going this way?
Irene pulled back the window shade. She couldn't recognize the buildings going past outside, but they were clearly on a main street. I think we're going faster, she began, then yelped in shock as chaotic power flared across the window. She managed to snatch her fingers back just in time before it could touch them. Across the carriage, Kai flinched back from the window on his side, bumping into Vale.
Driver!
Vale shouted.
What is going on?
The cab jolted as it speeded up again.
The name is Alberich,
a voice called from above, audible over the rattling of the wheels and the creaking of the carriage.
I suggest you ask your friends what that means, Mr. Vale.
Irene was conscious that she'd probably gone pale, but she was too busy trying not to shake with sheer terror to spend much time bothering about it. She couldn't handle this. She couldn't. Her hand was still infected. This was Alberich, the Alberich, the one who had been cast out of the library. There was no way she could handle this.
Brace, Miss Winters,
Vale instructed Kai, then kicked out at the door with a coiled strength that should have burst it open. It didn't. The door stayed firmly in position, and the walls of the cab flexed with it as if it was a continuous part of the cab's structure. Vale recoiled into his seat, thrown back by his own force, and bit back a muffled oath.
I'm afraid you librarians have become an inconvenience,
the voice called down. Male, Irene noted, with a part of her brain that was capable of doing something other than shudder and try to hide. No discernible accent, precise. Something about the rhythm of it was vaguely familiar, as though she'd heard someone else speak in the same way.
I require that book for my own collection. A pity to lose you as well, Mr. Vale, but I draw the line at stopping the cab to let you out.
Someone in the street ahead of them screamed as they dived out of the way of the speeding cab.
I think not,
Vale said coldly. He spun his cane in his hands and smashed the silver head against the window. The glass took the blow without breaking or even splintering.
He sealed the cab!
Irene forced the words out, nearly shouting against the banging and clattering of the wheels on cobblestones.
Chaos magic! He's somehow bound it into a coherent whole, so nothing can get in or out. You'd have to break the whole thing to break part of it.
Quite accurate, the voice said, though it's not airtight or watertight. A logical paradox, which I'm afraid you won't have the time to appreciate. The river,
Kai said, barely audibly, and the same knowledge was in Vale's eyes. Irene's thoughts ran round inside her head.
There must be something I can do, even if the language isn't working reliably for me. Could I use it enough to save us? But the cab itself is chaos contaminated, and Alberic too. So maybe it would cancel out any library powers anyway.
Adieu,
Alberic said. The cab rocked again and speeded up in one last rush towards the river.
Together,
Vale shouted.
Enough weight, and we can force it over.
He threw himself against the side of the cab, and a moment later, Irene and Kai joined him, struggling together in the confined space. The cab tilted, regained balance, tilted again.
Yes!
Kai exulted. And the cab went over into the river. Chapter 13. The carriage did not sink elegantly into the water like a dying swan. It hit the surface of the river with a rattling crash that threw Irene into Kai, and Kai into Vale, and Vale into the wall of the carriage.
Force equals mass times acceleration, Irene thought dizzily. She should be thinking of a way out of this, but her thoughts cowered like frightened rabbits. She didn't want to think. The carriage tumbled as it began to sink, rolling over as the river tugged at it. The three of them automatically grabbed handles and benches, wedging themselves into corners until the vehicle came to a jolting stop on its side. Black Thames water covered the windows, not entirely cutting off all light, but making it only barely possible for the three of them to see each other.
The usual protocol in these cases is to wait until we are fully submerged, then open a window to equalize the water pressure and swim up to the surface,
Vale stated. Irene could hear the sheer control in his voice over the creaking of the carriage and the slow trickling sound of water.
But if that person has sealed the carriage, given that I could not break the window earlier, this tactic would be ineffective.
Right. She had to explain to Vale about Alberic. She owed him an explanation about a great many things now. But what was the point, if they were just going to die? Well, it did remove the need for justifications. Yet, there were other ways of dodging that sort of thing, and she was avoiding the subject again, and the water was pressing down, and they were all going to die.
He doesn't just want us dead. He wants us dying in fear, in the dark, and slowly. This isn't just wanting to get us out of the way so he can work undisturbed. It's malice, pure and simple.
She had been afraid. She had been so very afraid that she'd been cringing in the corner, unwilling to speak, let alone act. But now, something else woke in her.
I will not tolerate this. Then we're just going to have to find a way to break it, Irene said. She forced herself to lean forward. What one man can do, another can undo.
Saying the words made them possible, gave her strength.
But you can't touch his magic,
Kai said.
When it infected you before, it nearly killed you.
She wished that she had time to think this through calmly, to plan, to consider. "Wait," she said, pulling the glove off her damaged hand and pointing her fingers at the window. "I've got an idea."
"Would you care to explain?" Vale invited tensely.
"I was attacked by the same forces he used earlier," Irene said. She could feel the cold water soaking into her slippers and stockings, curling up around her ankles. "If I can identify them and expel them, it should break the binding, and we can swim out of here."
"Very good."
Vale eased himself further back in his seat. Perhaps it was only the dim light that made Irene think that he was trying to position himself as far away from her as possible. She'd sort things out later. She'd explain things later. Right now, she just had to make sure there would be a later. Irene held her fingers a fraction of an inch away from the window and focused. Away from the water, the darkness, the two men in the carriage with her, and into a world where language structured reality. It was a fact that Alberic controlled and used chaotic forces. The chaotic forces must therefore be discrete and identifiable. But she had no words in the language for these forces, and she could only control what she could name or describe. However, she could name and describe herself. It wasn't a thing that the librarians did very often. Oh, certainly if you had a broken left arm, you could try saying, "My left tibia is in fact not fractured but perfectly whole." But while your tibia might obey, your muscles would still be torn and any wound would still be open. Unless you could name every single thing that required naming, you would probably end up with a partly healed wound that would be more trouble than letting it heal in the normal way. While some librarians went in for that level of detail and were very sought after, Irene was not one of them. But a person, especially a librarian, could be named and described holistically as a single entity. She bore the library's mark on her flesh, and her name was in the language. If she could enforce that strongly enough, deliberately enough, there would be no space for the chaos forces inside her. Without that to contend with, she could finally access her full powers as a librarian. This was not something she'd ever tried. Then again, she'd never been infested to this degree before. Only imminent death would force her to play with dangerous, untested theoretical techniques. Otherwise, maybe she'd have thought of this earlier. Her life was far too full of learning experiences. Before she could lose her nerve, she shaped the words with her lips, barely audible, speaking in the language. "I am Irene. I am a librarian. I am a servant of the library." Her brand burned across her back as she enforced her will, but she felt curiously distanced from the pain, as though she could shrug it away and wish it gone. In a flash of insight, she realized that would be disastrous. What she felt in her was the conflict between self-definition and the contamination. She couldn't afford to ignore it. She had to embrace it. But it hurt. She heard her breath catch, the sound strange in her ears.
"Irene," Kai said, his voice concerned. It was too dark to see him now.
With a racking surge, like vomit after eating spoiled food, the chaos power came jolting out of her. She tried not to think of the buffet earlier that evening. Salmon, mussels, crab, soup, little prawns in sauce. And failed. It spilled from her hand, boiling off her fingers in waves of shadow that rippled in the air. And like any living thing, it looked for shelter, for something like itself. It jumped for the window, arcing through the narrow span of air, and crackled into the glass. Irene had just enough time to wonder if she should jump away from the window when it broke. Not just the window. The whole carriage came apart. First the window, splintering into shards of glass. Then sections of the carriage were toppling away from each other, like a badly glued model. She barely had time to feel the splinters of glass in her arm before the water came in like a hammer blow. And, surprisingly clearly in the near darkness, she saw Kai's face looking strangely decisive. His mouth was moving. He was saying something. She had several seconds of thrashing panic before she realized that she could breathe. The three of them were drifting along together at the bottom of the river, enclosed in a long continuous coil of dark water. It was a flexing, shifting, visible current in the river, separate from the rest of the water. It even felt cleaner. The shattered remnants of the carriage were already visible in the shifting mud of the bottom, some distance behind them. Above, through the surface of the water, street lamps glimmered in hazy balls of white and orange. Kai floated a few paces ahead of herself and Vale, moving at the same pace as them. He was saying something, but the river water filled her ears, and she couldn't hear him. Vale grasped at her sleeve. He mouthed something that was probably,
"What is going on, Miss Winters?"
On the positive side, Irene reassured herself, he must be feeling more composed if he was back to calling her Miss Winters. She shrugged as obviously as she could, gesturing soothingly.
"It is all under control," she mouthed back.
Vale didn't look as if he believed her, which was a shame, because she was now sure that things actually were back under control, to the extent that the three of them weren't about to drown, at least. No, the real problem was something else entirely. Now she was sure what Kai really was. A river spirit might have changed himself to water to save them, and a nature spirit of some other type might have cajoled or persuaded the river to help them. But only one sort of being would give orders to a river. Kai was a dragon. What the hell was she supposed to do about that? And he'd chosen to reveal himself in order to save them. Not himself. He would presumably have managed quite comfortably on his own. But them, her and Vale. It was a commitment on Kai's part that made her worry whether she would be able to answer it. She didn't like commitments to other people. They could get messy. The tumbling rush of the current veered towards the far bank, and then lifted the three of them out of the water itself, rising in an arc of dark water. They were placed on the dockside, deposited as lightly as driftwood. A couple of beggars who'd been nursing their hands over a small fire just sat there, looking at the three of them numbly as the water sloshed over the pavement and ebbed back to the river again. A curl of the river still held itself aloft, curving towards where Kai stood. It wasn't quite like a serpent. The head had features something like a human, and something like a dragon. Yes, that again. There was also something of the lion, mane wet and draggled with weeds and dirt. Its eyes gleamed yellow as fog lamps, burning under heavy brows. This spirit was as polluted as the water itself, its body entwined with fragments of garbage and long streaks of filth. A heavy smell of oil and weed clung to it, wafting thickly along the dock. Kai faced it and gave a small, precise inclination of his head.
"Your service is acknowledged," he said firmly. "Return with my thanks, and the thanks of my family."
The river spirit bowed its head in a long fluctuation that rippled along its body, then reared up and crashed back into the river in a spray of black water. The eyes were the last thing to vanish beneath the surface of the river, disappearing slowly rather than simply closing, visible for a long moment under the dark water. Vale took a step forward.
"What was that?"
he demanded, shocked.
"What did you do? What is it that you've brought into my London, sir?"
Kai turned with a snarl, his eyes an inhuman shade of blue, as fierce and dangerous as gas flames.
"What it was, sir, was..."
"Was under my orders," Irene said, stepping between them. She couldn't allow this to degenerate into a shouting match. And more than that, she could sense something archaic and furious within Kai, the dragon under the human skin, now very close to the surface. She had to divert it now, give him familiar channels to work in, and give Vale a target, herself, who he simply couldn't shout down without shattering his own rules of custom and propriety. She regarded Vale firmly, refusing to show him an inch of fear or terror or even, she hoped, nervousness.
"I have promised you more information, sir, and you shall have it. But I suggest we return to your lodgings first. Mr. Strongrock acted on my instructions to protect and save us all."
It was a fairly small lie. Really, only a half lie as lies went. because Kai had certainly known she would want him to protect all of them.
And this is no time to be arguing, when we're all fighting a greater enemy.
Vale regarded her for a moment, then granted her a small nod, nearly the mirror image of Kai's own salutation to the river spirit.
Very well, Miss Winters. We shall return to my lodgings. I can only have faith in you, I suppose, as I have done before.
That stung, as no doubt it was meant to. She smiled as sweetly as she could, then turned to Kai.
We can talk later, she said softly, or we can talk now, but either way, I know what you are, and it doesn't matter.
You think very highly of yourself,
Kai answered, equally quietly, but far more deadly.
If you believe that it doesn't matter.
This was very different to handling Vale. There, she had needed to hide her fear to convince him to wait for information. Here, with Kai, she needed to show her control and dispassion. Or, she could feel it in her bones, she would lose him to his true nature. She couldn't afford that. She had a responsibility to the library, and she had a responsibility to him.
Are you still my student? She asked him directly. Am I still your mentor?
Nothing more than that. The bond of loyalty and the bond of trust. Anything else was something that they would have to work out later. He looked at her, and something inhuman seethed behind his eyes.
Do you think you can command me?
Yes, she said,
and she spoke in the language. The word hung in the air between them. Then Kai closed his eyes and reopened them, and now they were a human blue, sharp, but no longer alien.
Then I believe I am still under your orders, he said,
and he managed a very small smile.
Miss Winters, Mr. Strongrock, over here,
Vale called. He had walked to where the dock ended and the houses began, and had somehow managed to conjure up a carriage. As Irene followed Kai across to the carriage, struggling with her soaked skirts and cloak, she couldn't help but notice that Kai was perfectly dry. It didn't seem fair, but it was a comforting small thing on which to concentrate. She could be aggravated by something simple, rather than floundering in terror at what she had just faced down.
Chapter 14.
I would appreciate that explanation, Miss Winters,
Vale said as he refilled their teacups. There had been hot baths and bandaging of injuries. Even Kai, untouched by the dirty water of the Thames, needed to clean himself after the exertions of the reception and its accompanying alligator blood. As for Vale and Irene, they were soaked and filthy. The driver had been muttering audibly about getting his carriage cleaned, even after a very generous tip from Vale. Irene would gladly have soaked for a few more hours, but she hadn't felt it safe to leave Vale and Kai alone to talk for too long. Kai's temper was still touchy, and Vale might ask a question that was more dangerous than he realized. With a virtuous feeling of self-sacrifice, she'd dragged herself out of the hip bath that she'd been allotted, wrapped herself up in the heavy flannel dressing gown Vale had lent her, turbaned her hair in a towel, and gone out to join the others in Vale's study for tea and interrogation. She hadn't asked why Vale had a spare woman's dressing gown in his wardrobe, presumably specifically for female victims of crime who'd had a drenching. However, she didn't think it belonged to any close female associate of Vale's. For one thing, it clearly hadn't been used for months, and for another, any female trying to be flirtatious would not choose a dressing gown made of heavy flannel. For a third thing, Vale hadn't offered her any other female clothing. And Vale hadn't given her the sort of attention that even the politest of men might give a soaked, wet woman in dripping clothing. He'd bustled her off towards the hot tub as briskly as the matron from her old boarding school. Not that she wanted him to give her that sort of attention, anyhow. Irene sipped her tea, milk, two lumps of sugar, suitable for people suffering from shock.
I should warn you that it is a little, far-fetched, she said,
trying to think how best to explain it, or, failing all else, lie about it. Vale shrugged. His dressing gown was red and black silk. His hair was still damp, combed into position, and gleaming darkly in the light from the lamps.
I can hardly object until I have heard it.
Somewhere amidst the confusion, he had found time to rearrange his books, after the disorder which Irene had inflicted on them, and neat piles of half-sorted literature sat around his chair like patient children. Kai sipped his own tea, no milk, no sugar, black and brooding, and watched the two of them. There was still that feeling of distance about him. He was wearing what was obviously Vale's second-best dressing gown, the same colours and design, but more worn on the elbows, and with small burn holes marring the embroidery of the cuffs. His mouth was pinched in stubborn lines.
"Mr. Strongrock and I are agents of a library," Irene started. "It is often known as the Invisible Library among those who have heard of it, as it's hidden from most."
"A reasonable enough name," Vale granted. "Where is it based? I would hardly think that it could be London."
"Since I have never heard of it," he didn't bother to add.
"Ah, now this would be the implausible bit," Irene said. "Are you familiar with the concept of alternate worlds?"
Vale put down his cup, his regard assessing rather than outright disbelieving.
"The theory has been mooted by some of the more metaphysically inclined philosophers and scientists. While I do not necessarily believe in it, I must admit that it has a certain quality of inherent satisfaction. That is, to coin a phrase, it makes sense that possible fulcrum points in history have created alternate worlds where things might have been different."
Irene nodded. That way of looking at it would do for the moment.
"I and Mr. Strongrock are agents of a library which exists between the alternate worlds. Our task is to collect books for the library from all those worlds, to preserve them."
She glanced meaningfully at his crowded bookshelves.
"You must admit that to a keen reader, like yourself or like me, that would also make sense."
Your argument would appeal to any bibliophile, Miss Winters. Should I take it that you are here in pursuit of a particular book?"
Irene nodded again. "The copy of Grimm that Lord Wyndham had before his death. But it seems that we aren't the only people after it." Vale hesitated for a long moment.
"Very well. I can postulate an interdimensional library hunting down rare books. I can accept the agents of that library having unusual powers."
He glanced at Kai.
"Once one accepts the basic concept as possible, today's events become, well, not entirely inexplicable. I have a great many questions, but one query in particular intrigues me, and I trust that you can give me a solid answer to it. Why should you be looking for Grimm's fairy tales? Why not the latest scientific advances?"
Irene smiled. This part had always warmed her somewhere deep inside. She leaned forward in turn, putting her cup down.
"Mr. Vale, while all the alternate worlds exist, and while they may have different metaphysical laws, their physical laws are the same. Iron is iron, radium is radium, gunpowder is gunpowder, and if you drop an object, it will fall according to the law of gravity. Scientific discoveries are the same across the alternates, and while they are no doubt important, we don't value them as we do creative work. There may be 100 brothers Jacob and Wilhelm Grimm in 100 different worlds, and each time they may have written a different set of fairy tales. That's where our interest lies."
Vale blinked.
"But in that case, you could import the discoveries from other worlds. You could bring more than simply fiction. New technologies, new wonders of science. Have you no concept of the good you could do for these?"
He remembered himself.
"Hypothetical alternate worlds. Wouldn't work,"
Kai said, staring at his tea.
"What my colleague is trying to say," Irene said patiently, "is that, while it has been tried, firstly, the library does not care to make itself public. Secondly, we cannot introduce material for which there is no support infrastructure. That is what would happen if we tried to bring in discoveries that your current science didn't support. And as a result, the discovery wouldn't take root. It would probably be written off as a fake in short order.
Also, please consider, what would be the dangers facing a person attempting to introduce entirely new scientific knowledge to this world? To this country?
Vale nodded slowly, his expression bitter.
I take your point, he said.
He didn't sound convinced, though.
And lastly, Irene said, a little embarrassed that she had to point it out, all of us who are sealed to the library are people who have chosen this way of life because we loved books. None of us wanted to save worlds. I mean, not that we object to saving worlds.
She shrugged, picking up her teacup again.
We want books. We love books. We live with books. Someone who joined the library just so that they could try to use the library to benefit their own world. Well, I suppose it would be ethical, but it isn't the purpose of the library.
Then what is the purpose of the library?
Vale asked.
To save books, Irene said firmly.
The words were so automatic that she didn't even need to think about them. She'd spent all her life with the idea. But they had never sounded hollow to her before. She made herself focus on the familiar justification.
To save created works. In time, if their original alternate loses them, we can give them back copies so that they aren't lost. In the meantime, the library exists and endures.
So why did Alberic leave? Vale asked.
Irene swallowed. She hadn't expected him to get to that point quite that fast. The little that she knew about Alberic was bad enough that she had been happy to write him off as a myth. She didn't really want to think of him as a real person with potentially terrifying motivations. Then she blinked.
Wait, how did you know that?
Vale waved a hand dismissively.
Simple enough. The fellow is clearly a deserter from your own organization. Given what I know about it from you, his possible motives are either personal advantage, or he has overarching principles that conflict with your own stated mission, which is to save books and not interfere in the workings of other worlds. But if it were a question of personal advantage, why bother to hunt down and assassinate other librarians? If he wanted money, fame, or adventure, presumably other librarians wouldn't get in his way, as long as he didn't obstruct your searches for specific books. And what specific book would be that important to him if he were pursuing personal gain? So perhaps he has a larger plan, one that requires your non-interference. This would require him to be motivated by personal power, or have some goal which he believes is more important than your library's search for books. Your own response confirms this. Why else would library agents feel such a sense of dread towards a mere rogue agent?
Irene reminded herself bitterly not to underestimate Vale again. She also ignored Kai, who was twiddling his fingers in his lap with an air of smug unconcern.
Fine. I suppose I should be glad his mood's improving. Alberic left the library a while ago, she said reluctantly. I lack the clearance for full information on why. Or any information beyond the bare minimum.
So, this Alberic is a continual threat. Has he crossed your path before?
Irene shook her head. No, thank heavens. I had heard about him, of course. Everyone hears about him.
Even I'd heard about him, Kai put in, not very helpfully.
Kai is my junior, Irene said before Vale could ask for clarification of that statement. And I know the idea of an evil rogue librarian must sound like some kind of rumor, the sort of rumor which gets passed down through the years to frighten the novices. But there were stories about things happening to people one actually knew.
Things?
Vale asked.
People dying, Irene said bluntly, with pieces of them being sent back.
Kai started.
Was that why Dominic?
He began, then stopped a fraction too late.
I don't know, Irene said.
She turned to Vale again.
What Kai is trying to say is that the librarian who was supposed to be stationed locally in this alternate world has apparently been killed and mutilated. We found out just before I triggered the trap I mentioned, a trap set using chaos forces. These forces are something that Alberic uses.
She couldn't keep the distaste out of her voice. Vale nodded.
So, chaos. Is that what we term magic?
Irene tried to think how to explain it. She'd been planning to sidestep this part as much as possible, given Vale's apparent dislike of magic.
Not exactly. According to our cosmological model...
There, that was tactful, and avoided saying, this is how things really work. There are lawful and chaotic forces active in all worlds. Sometimes they take on a physical form, appearing as entities, or personifications of law or disorder, if you like. The lawful forces support reason and natural laws. The chaotic forces support impossibility and things that are blatantly irrational or disorderly. For example, dragons are lawful forces and the Fae support chaos. Fact versus fiction, if you like. Vale stiffened, like a hound catching a scent.
So Lord Silver is a supporter of chaos itself.
Irene nodded. This alternate is strongly affected by chaos. Silver is certainly at least one of the lesser Fae, who are usually confined inside a single alternate. I don't know if he is one of the greater ones, but I sincerely hope not. Such creatures even have the power to move between worlds. But they have nothing to do with the library. She wanted to make this extremely clear. We do not associate with them.
Except when obtaining party invitations, Vale said dryly.
I want that book, Irene said flatly. So does he, it seems, and so does Alberic. I need to know who has it. If Silver or Alberic already had it, they wouldn't be looking for it. Once I have it, Mr. Strongrock and I will be out of this alternate and won't need to bother you again. Vale nodded.
Very well.
Again there was the feeling of a confrontation being postponed until he had sufficient ammunition. Perhaps he wanted to bring her to justice as well, or perhaps he simply wanted to visit the library.
So tell me, he went on. When was the librarian stationed here murdered? When and how?
Irene glanced at Kai. Well, it must have been somewhere between yesterday afternoon and this morning, because we first met him yesterday afternoon when we came through from the library proper. The entrance is in the British Library, she added, a little reluctantly.
Really?
Vale said thoughtfully.
And when we came back this morning to speak with him...
Irene trailed off, wishing she didn't have to go into the next bit.
We have reason to assume that he was dead by that point. Possibly for several hours.
Why? Vale demanded. You found his body?
We found his skin, Irene said. In a jar of vinegar.
Kai reached across and touched her wrist. She knew that it was inappropriate for her to show weakness, but she found it comforting. Vale sat back in his chair.
I see, he said. That must have been a great shock for you, Miss Winters.
Irene remembered the pungent smell. Her stomach twisted.
Yes, she said. It was. I'm sorry. I'm afraid I find it difficult to be as detached as I should be. He'd been friendly, helpful, kind. Just simply nice.
And you are quite sure that it was your contact? Vale prompted.
Irene nodded reluctantly. She hadn't wanted to admit this bit if she could have avoided it.
All librarians have a mark on their body, she said. It looks like a tattoo done in black ink. It cannot be removed.
Vale was quite clearly considering asking whether he could see hers, but after a moment's hesitation, he nodded. Possibly the fact that she hadn't offered to show it was hint enough.
And, if I may be frank, would the trap that had been set possibly have killed you?
Irene had been trying to avoid thinking about that. She had plenty of productive ways to occupy her mind, besides yet one more way in which she had almost died in the last couple of days.
Yes, she said. If Mr. Strongrock had not broken my link to it, it might well have done. It would certainly have incapacitated me and left me helpless. And, she frowned, her mind sensing something important. Let me think. Alberic would have known I would touch the door, not Mr. Strongrock, because only I can access the library. Even if I survived,
He'd know the chaos contamination would prevent me accessing the library. He'd also be aware that the contamination would only last for a few days. Vale nodded. A spark kindled in his eyes.
That seems logical.